Hello, welcome to this podcast on the topic of the future of innovation as part of Innovation Week 2023. I'm James Hallward. I'm the head of policy and external affairs at the Council of Deans of Health. And I'm delighted to be joined by Professor Jane Perry, who's the convener of the Council of Deans of Health England, and Dr. Ian Matheson, who's the convener of the Council of Deans of Health Wales. You'll all be aware that we did lots of work over the pandemic and then post-pandemic to look at what lessons have been learned and how we could implement them and not go backwards, how we could keep our foot on the pedal. But now I think we're at a point, particularly as we look to the next general election, where innovation, research, technology, all of these things are such crucial issues that have profound implications for the future of healthcare education, but are politically salient issues in their own right as well. In the last general election manifesto, the Conservative Party committed to making the UK a science superpower. In the run-up to the general election next year, we're hearing things from all major parties that look at embracing innovation, and particularly around healthcare and what we can do on this, and in light of the challenges that the NHS faces, as well as the real push to educate the next generation of healthcare professionals, innovation does seem like a route that we can do to not just deliver on the quantity needed, but the quality needed as well. Obviously, in the run-up to this as well, we're now aware that there's a whole new department dedicated to this in Westminster, so the Department of Science, Innovation and Technology. And again, it was reassuring from a council perspective to see how this had explicit remit across departments, and there was reference to health in some of its founding documents. But I thought we'd move on to Jane, to Ian, and to your thoughts, really, as we look into areas of discussion. So three areas that I thought we could touch on, but please, by all means, change course, look at kind of what interests you. So I think what we wanted to look at was, where do you think innovation is on the agenda for members of the council as we kind of move beyond the pandemic? What innovation do you expect or hope to see more of in the next 5 to 10 years? How can we build a culture within our sector that promotes innovative pedagogy?
I think that, you know, coming out of the pandemic, it's really important that we don't lose the innovation that we saw during that time. Innovation is all about creative ideas. And when you're in the middle of a pandemic and you're trying to ensure that you're pushing a workforce through because the NHS and other providers need it, people really did unleash their creative ideas. And so coming out of the pandemic, it would be really sad if we lost some of that innovation, because we saw the most fantastic case studies. We saw fantastic examples of people thinking outside the box in terms of placements, in terms of using technology, in terms of collaborating at an even stronger length than they already do with their practice partners, their students and academics together, to really, really drive a collaboration of supporting students, students feeling that they were getting a good experience, and keeping that really innovative pedagogy going through. We saw fantastic things around people couldn't have international real experiences, so they had virtual international experiences. I think we should carry that on, because we work in a global world. I think universities came together regionally up and down the country to support one another, because we were all trying to think about the best way that we could move forward. So this is about sharing really good practice. I think one of the places that we got to that would be really, really important to drive innovatively forward is future-proofing what's, you know, the graduate of the future should look like. You know, we know that the skills, a new generation skills, are very different, and health is very different to, and will be very different in the future. So as we move forward, it's going to be really important that we keep that creativity and innovation really at the forefront of everything we do. We need to be thinking about transferable skills for our students that could be taken into all sorts of different healthcare roles. We need to make people very digitally competent from inception right through to very advanced roles. We need to actually research and evaluate the power of simulation and immersive technology as a really strong learning experience for our students. We absolutely must co-create that with practice partners. We need to drive the staff development for both our practice partners and our own academics to support our students moving forward in this space. It's a really exciting time, and I hope we don't lose that innovation and we continue that fabulous journey that we've all really bought into.
Ian, what are your thoughts on that kind of post-pandemic?
So I think that there's a context that stretches back a bit further. So I think that we can recognise that in our universities we've got a structure around about innovation. I certainly have worked beside colleagues who have been associate deans for enterprise for quite some time, and we've had the structure within universities that have recognised the importance of enterprise, so PBCs for enterprise, and that language has kind of changed, and we can probably recognise now that innovation is a broader church than perhaps originally conceptualised it. I think that one of the things that's really important is that the pandemic has taught us that we should be asking why not, and we should not be just assuming that there are constraints in place that really we've constructed. So from the pandemic, we've learned how to push things forward in a range of different ways. So I think the scene is set for us to learn from those lessons. I think there's a real danger that we won't learn from those lessons, and I think that we need to be really vigilant to move forward and think about how we can ensure that the momentum that I think everybody would agree that was established then during the pandemic out of necessity is continued on. Jane's mentioned some really important themes, and I think the kind of digital simulation and the way we approach placements, the way that we approach collaboration, I think that these are all really important themes. But I also think that we need to be thinking about the structure that we have within our universities to facilitate engagement with the innovation agenda. So in my own university, I work very closely with one particular university health board, and we've actually just managed to organise a secondment where the head of innovation from the trust is working with us a couple of days a week. And they're starting off quite small. They're actually taking a look at what the capacity and capability is to actually pursue the range of agendas which actually come into the health board. So the health board's purview is broader than the universities, I'm finding. And we're learning a lot about the wide range of opportunities that come in relation to a whole host of agendas. So I think that the scene is set for us to work in some really innovative ways.
What strikes me with this as well is talking to members, particularly in the work that was put together for the Pandemic Powered Improvements Report, was that when we think about innovation, we very often think about technology, things that are cutting edge. But actually, some of what was done when it came to innovation was indeed almost what you were saying, Ian, about kind of structures. How do people just start to work a bit differently? How do they do age-old practices, but in a new way? And so while technology plays such a crucial part, actually that kind of working practice side of it is so crucial as well. And it's always good, I think, to be kind of reflective and think, why do we do what we do? And are there better ways of doing it? I suppose there's always a risk that we kind of fall into mindsets that don't interrogate why we do it. So it's always useful to do that. And innovation does feel like an ongoing process rather than a kind of an event, and then we kind of just plateau from there. Let's hope that we are moving onwards and upwards with it. Jane, what innovation do you expect or hope to see more of in the next 5 to 10 years?
I certainly would like to see a big growth in the use of technology, but applied so people can actually see its value. See that actually, if somebody sees something in an immersive space, it does actually prepare them to see it in a real space. And so to join that up in terms of that technology. One of the areas that I think of resistant was actually that you couldn't do consultations online and you couldn't speak to patients online and various other things. But I think we've demystified that that can be done, and that actually, we do have a different market. Patients. And so what we need is to be able to support our students and our practice partners with flexible services where, if people do want consultations online, that's available. If they do want to see people face to face, that's available. So a lot of fluidity and flexibility in terms of how you can access healthcare services and how we support our students to be innovative in that space, working with our practice partners so that we develop and create new ways of working moving forward. I think it's really important that we really are mindful of the different generations and where they might want to be in that space and how they might one want to access healthcare, but two actually want to see their careers developing. So really making sure that we support the training of students for a lot of flexibility within that career. And then I think something that's really stood out well, and I think that we nearly do need to take forward, this whole area around mental health and well-being, and just how important that is about developing and supporting resilience in a very, very changing world. So actually, there are a lot of soft and transferable skills that we really need need to embed beyond just technology to support our students to be able to be flexible in that space, and our practice partners as well. The final thing I'd really love to see is a really, really good, strong push towards the value of careers in healthcare in general. I think, you know, there's been a lot of media that really doesn't always support just how wonderful that those of us who've had a long career in health can be. And I would love to see a real drive to push forward what a fantastic career it is to work in health and healthcare, and what an exciting future technology has.
I suppose it's a bit of a risk as well, thinking ahead to the next 5 and 10 years, that you think about all the various technologies that have been created over our lifetimes that then become redundant because they've been superseded by something else.
You're completely right, Jim. I think it's more about equipping people with the competency to be adaptable. So digital skills just doesn't mean just teaching them one type of new technology, because they say that could change next year, everything changed so quickly. It's about being able to be agile in that space. So having the competencies and skills to you know, and sometimes it's even just the basics, because you know, some really, really digitally competent people don't actually manage an Excel spreadsheet very well. So I think there's something about fundamental skills that once you've got them, they're transferable into different spaces. So, you know, I started off with a brick of a mobile phone as the first car phone. I've now moved into something that I can play with much, you know, in a completely different way. But I think it is about making sure that the skill sets that we're teaching are there to be adaptable, to be flexible, so that we're not teaching just one direction, it looks like this. It's the adaptability and the future, and that's really important and for us to get right.
Yes, so I think that the challenges for us to anchor our work in innovation to the challenges that we face, there's most definitely something around the workforce, and I think that relates to technology and digital. So, you know, solutions in that domain are going to help us to address workforce challenges. So I was really taken by the top overview. You know, it was subtitled "Preparing Healthcare Professionals for the Digital Future," and that painted a really compelling vision of a digitally enabled future. What it didn't do was actually set out a roadmap. So you've got this fantastic vision of the future, but you've not got the details of how you're going to get there. But that probably creates a space where we can work. So it's for us to you know, take the baton and run with it, and actually help to fill in that roadmap and create it. So I think the universities have a very important role to play in that regard. I think that there's an interesting issue related to workforce challenges. I think workforce challenges are dominant influence on the way that we need to innovate. And I think that one of the conversations we mustn't shy away from is how we facilitate effective practice. And that means that we need to be thinking about professional boundaries. Now, I think that a lot of the listeners may not be aware that there is actually a working group that's been convened by the chair of the HCPC. And the chair of various different regulators are taking part in that, and I've been fortunate enough to be attending that on behalf of the council. And they're discussing how the regulators can work together. And it started off with a conversation. It's very much in the same burning stages at the moment, but it started off with a conversation of how regulators are too often seen as restricting practice and policing practice. And there's a space that they need to move into, which is in relation to facilitating effective practice. So they need to be really helping create the kind of infrastructure within their organisations to ensure that their members feel fully supported and facilitated to be as effective as they can be. Now, one of the areas that I think is really important is the issue of annotation on professional registers. So I think that if we stand back, I've stood back recently and taken a look at this and thought that I'm not satisfied with what I'm seeing there. I don't think we're using annotations the way that we can. We have a mechanism there by which we can facilitate members of different professions to undertake different extended scope roles. But unfortunately, it's restricted to a limited number of aspects to practice. So there's this idea, one of my hopes for the future is most definitely that we will see greater use of annotation to facilitate effective practice amongst a range of professions. So that's an example of a kind of tangible thing that could be done, and we could work in that direction against that background of more effective practice and what digital is going to mean and what technology is going to mean. We're going to have to develop the competencies to ensure that we can practice in a safe and regulated way when we're using those technologies.
Again, it's, I suppose, one of those reminders as well that there are a range of kind of factors at play here. It's not as simple as saying we want to embrace innovation, we want to do more on that. We obviously are in regulated environments, and there are whole discussions to be had around how that can incentivize innovation and where there might be risks that it hampers it, while at the same time balancing that with the obvious necessity for maintaining patient safety, public confidence. All of that feeds into a really interesting kind of mix of different kind of players that I suppose we need to engage with and bring people with us. So it almost touches on what we discussed earlier, where the saying, where's the public perception and where are we? And maybe there is always that risk that because we're that bit further ahead in terms of how we see it, that we leave people behind, and there's that trust gap that we need to address. I suppose it's almost not like we were saying, it's not just about a one-off thing. It's not just about one piece of technology or kind of one approach. It does seem about that culture. So what thoughts have you got on that? How can we develop a culture that really facilitates this?
I mean, that's it's always a challenging question to think about how we change culture. I think that it's about building that up and by utilising the opportunities we have. So we've spoken about the, I've already given an example of the work that I'm doing for the University of Health Board in relation to innovation with having a member of their staff working with us. And one of the things that's usually convincing about is that health boards don't always have a structure to facilitate rapid innovation. So I think that one of the things that we can do to actually create the, you know, have the vehicles by which we can promote innovation is to realise the strengths that different partners can bring to collaborations so that we can facilitate more rapid progress together. So there's a space that universities can fill in. So I think that the way that we change the culture, create the culture, we identify the opportunities, we look at the capacity and capability amongst the partners who are collaborating to innovate, and we work within that space to ensure that every partner knows their role and brings something to it. So I think that it's related to that issue of a mature understanding of what each partner is bringing. Now, you know, in front of me, you know, you might not be surprised to find out that I've got some documents open in front of me. And I've actually got the Welsh Government Innovation Strategy that was launched earlier this year. This builds on a previous strategy from 2012, and the themes there are about improving collaboration, promoting that culture, providing flexible support and finance, having innovation within government to promote it, and also prioritising and creating the critical mass. So I think that there's a range of different things there which are very general. There's nothing really surprising there. But I think that it's an explicit focus on those drivers, those sort of conditions that are necessary to allow us to genuinely innovate, that are going to be important. We also need to work really hard to remove barriers. So barriers act as a detriment to progress, and there can be the best of intentions. But when we meet barriers, and that can be because of institutional inertia or attitude to risk. So there are things we've got to do to work to create the conditions which remove the barriers and allow meaningful progress to be made. And I realise that that's a kind of rambling answer, but it's a really challenging thing to, it's a very simple question, but it's actually very complex and it's multifactorial, it's multi-layered.
It's always quite a harsh question, because I think you summed it up for me, how do you change culture? And it's such a big thing to do. And successive governments have realised you can't just legislate and expect culture to change. So we can't expect universities or the NHS or others just simply by kind of decree say we're going to change the culture on it. If only it could be so simple. But there's some really interesting points in there in terms of how you sow the seeds and hopefully cultivate them so we are in a place where actually you do have a culture that adapts to that.
And one of the things that I'd add in there is that I think that we're very good at talking at a high level about the need to innovate. I'm a big fan of exemplifying what that actually means. So I think that there can be a great value in case studies, looking at clear examples which illustrate what can be achieved and how you actually do it. So I think that working in that area, they were exemplifying what this actually means and what this looks like. I think that if you do that on one or two occasions, then it can be a powerful message that goes through from that, and different people can then extrapolate that and apply it in a wider range of contexts. So there's a high-line message, there's a strategic intention, but there's actually how that's operationalised. And I think there's a great value in really using case studies, thinking about how it's operationalised, and that can lead to lots more work.
There's also trying to balance a natural aversion to risk with also realizing that as we take those steps forward, there will be stumbles and there will be moments when you realize actually that was the wrong turn, but what can we learn from that as well? And so I suppose for me, kind of a true culture that embraces innovation also is one that accepts that there will be failures and there will be moments where we have to step back and learn the good and the bad lessons as well. As we kind of do this, it's not a simple let's press the button and innovate and be fantastic. There will be some stop start moments and there'll be some points where you think, okay, that worked okay, but we could do it better. And I think building that into a culture is crucial too. Jane, I don't know if you have some kind of thoughts around this.
Yes, I think that's one of the biggest challenges, actually. I agree with everything Ian said about, you know, how you get the innovation strategy together and everything. But I think there's also a culture of people being okay with failure, because you actually have to fail to succeed, succeed to fail. So you know, if you don't take calculated risks, I say calculated rather than anything else, calculated risks, then you aren't going to find out the benefits for them. And I think people have to see failure as not in a punitive way, but in a learning way, because life is perpetually about continual improvements, and nobody gets it right, and we'll never get it right. We'll always be working towards getting things better. And the greatest innovators in the world have, if you spoke to them, and it's extremely well evidenced and written about, have made an awful lot of failed attempts at innovations until they found that the one that's made them, you know, really highly successful. So building that culture in is quite hard, because I think, you know, we do have a society that wants to be high performing and succeed and say failure as you know, a very sort of awful thing to happen. And I think that's a serious culture change. It's sort of, you know, much more at the people level to say, look, it's okay. And a huge piece about culture change is taking everybody with you. You know, collaboration, which I think was where Ian was really talking at a very big sort of macro level, is so important, is that you take people with you. And part of that is working interprofessionally as well. I think we are driving much more towards integrated teams and breaking down the silos. Again, we saw a lot of that in COVID, particularly around physios and nurses working together, and, you know, in things like proning, for example, in ITU, all sorts of fantastic practice, and we need to really hone that. One other thing I didn't say when we were talking earlier about culture change as well is data analytics. We have to work with data now in a totally different way, and I think that's a bit of a scary skill. So it's about demystifying scary skills, making them available to everybody, and being able to drive things together, you know, at every single levels of the organisation, wider and strategically as well.
So just as Jane was talking there, I was thinking about one of the other ways in which we've got perceptualised innovation. So I really think that innovation is nothing without implementation. And I think that we see a constant drive to innovate in more and more interesting ways. And I think that we need to take a moment to pause and think about what's effective and think about how we implement that in a systematic manner. Now, that resonates with a couple of things. In the Reef Lectures in 2014, Atul Gawande, who's a really well-known writer and commentator on healthcare, I think that I'm paraphrasing, but he said something along the lines of, you know, the most important innovation of healthcare would be to use the information we have and implement that systematically. It resonates with the principles of the Cochrane collaboration, systematic reviews. So it's not something that's new, but I don't think it's something that we've done particularly well. So pausing for a moment and thinking about the opportunities we have to implement new knowledge and new ideas is really important. This resonates with a talk that was provided at the Cancer Beans event in, I think it was January 2019, and then by Hugh McKenna. And Hugh McKenna came back to the Glasgow conference in October 2022. And Hugh was the chair of the Unit Assessment 10.3 for REF. And I can remember Hugh essentially begging with Healthcare University to appreciate the impact that we have, and to focus their case studies on that impact. So I got that message at the January 2019 conference. After I saw him speak in 2022, I went up and asked him, you know, did we listen to you in 2019? And he said partially. So I think that we probably heard some of that message, but we need to probably take that a bit further and think about how we're in this really good situation where we can innovate and practice by applying our research systematically, and because our research relates to practice, you know, dominantly. And so there's a really important opportunity for us to think about how we can promote innovation by working systematically with partners to implement the new knowledge that we are generating.
We've come back to this a few times now, which is you don't innovate on your own, really. And when we spoke about failure, actually, that's the point, isn't it? You can learn from the lessons that others have learned as well. Where are the other sectors where they've had to look at embracing innovation? Often, whenever I'm explaining simulated learning, particularly to those who are a bit more sceptical, I look to the aerospace industry and think, you'd be very worried if you go up in a plane and it's their first flight. And yet sometimes when it comes to healthcare education, it's seen as almost second best, or it's instead of, and actually it's such a crucial complement. So I think there's something about learning from other sectors, using them as examples where people just naturally assume you should do that. You know, it's such a crucial time for the council when I think about the work that we're now doing to do closer partnership with our Australian colleagues, a country that we very often look to when it comes to innovation. We look at what they've done with simulated learning. We look to them when we think about kind of post-Brexit opportunities when it comes to standards, placements, things like that. And actually, that join-up hopefully allows us to learn more from them in terms of where they've made the right turns, the wrong turns, and vice versa. So again, I suppose it's about widening that pool of people that we work with so that we can also kind of bounce ideas off each other or sense check things or work out why something works in one environment and it doesn't work in another environment. Are there any risks that come with embracing innovation? What's the pushback?
It's a reasonable one because it's really being talked about quite a lot at the moment, particularly artificial intelligence and, you know, the issues around ChatGPT, never say GPT, and plagiarism and all of those things. You know, I think these challenges are just things we have to work through because, you know, at the moment there's still lots of debate on where you can use it successfully and where you need to be very careful. So I think it's just about staying on top of what's happening and adopting what's good. I think, you know, that's the point we kind of got to at the end of the last thing, really, is we need to use the evidence base of what's worked, adopt and diffuse it, make sure that we share the good practice, but also keep our eye on those areas where we may really be presented with challenges.
It's a massively complex question, and that's because we're seeing technology accelerating at a rate that's unparalleled, really. So we're in new realms. So the only thing that I want to add is to reflect on the original and best definition of evidence-based practice, and it was provided by the grandfather of evidence-based practice, David Sackett, where he spoke about the conscientious, explicit and judicious use of best evidence in the decisions that are taken about individual patients. So conscientious, explicit, judicious use of evidence, thinking about the evidence we have and thinking about the context we're applying it to. So I think that there's probably a greater need to really think in those ways.
Lord, just before we draw it to a close, I just wondered if either of you had kind of any closing thoughts on this theme of innovation, and if there is anything that we've not touched on that you think is worth kind of just committing to the record here in this discussion.
And the only thing I would add is that I think that we are in a really productive space. We've got lots of opportunity here. I think that the pandemic has led to challenges being amplified. There are new challenges and the challenges that have been amplified. We're facing some situations which require a lot of innovative thinking at scale by our university sector and by, you know, all of us. So I think that the key to success is to think about those collaborative relationships and think about the overlaps between our partner requirements and our capacity and capability. And I think that there's a sweet spot in there that we can work in. And I think that it's a rich fishing ground for innovation.
Really very similar. It's all about collaboration, risk management and shared vision. I think if we share visions moving forward together and we're all, open to working together to drive something really, really good forward, then innovation just happens, actually.
But just to close and say thank you very much to Dr. Ian Matheson, who's the convener of the Council of Deans of Health Wales, and to Professor Jane Perry, convener of the Council of Deans of Health England. Thank you.